Hello and welcome to the Goalkeepers Union podcast between the sticks. Me, Matt Beadle, here with the hot-stepping voice of goalkeeping, Richard Lee.
Indeed, hot-stepping. How are we, Matthew?
Here comes the hot-stepper.
Do you remember that tune?
Ina Kamosi. Do you remember it?
What was that the name?
That was the name of the group, yeah. It was actually the theme tune to a particular film. Do you remember the film?
Oh, okay. I'm pretty bad at general quizzes. I don't know the name of the film, no.
Not many people do. I think it was Pret-a-Porter.
Okay, this is a really useless fact to start this show.
Bring it back to goalkeeping. Come
Let's
on,
do it.
Back
How do we
to
do
goalkeeping.
This?
How are you going to do it?
I've got no idea. No. I think you've taken us down a path, a dead end.
A dead end. Well, you are hot-stepping your way through your apartment, through your complex, because you've got some goals. You didn't have some goals at the start of the year, but now you have some goals.
No, you did ask me on a previous show, did I have any New Year's resolutions? I didn't. But I now have one. So I have a holiday booked in April, which I'm looking forward to, providing we're able to go. I mean, it's been cancelled a couple of times already, but I'm kind of hopeful. Maybe there's light at the end of the tunnel. Maybe by April, I'm able to go abroad finally. But anyway, I worked out that it was 98 days. So I then figured out if I could average 10,000 steps a day between January 1st and the date that I'm going, I would be at 980,000 steps. So therefore, I've just rounded it up to a million, a cool million, and I want to do a million steps before I go on holiday.
So you're big, right, on the whole 10,000 thing, 10,000 hours of greatness, Malcolm Gladwell, all that sort of stuff. Does that apply here? Does the whole 10,000, do you want to become an expert on walking?
No, do you know what it is? I'll tell you what, and this is just probably since I've retired, the realization that I do very little aerobic exercise. I struggle anywhere with my knee a bit, so I don't go running. So I've seen that app on the phone, the health app, where you can see how many steps that you've done every day. And genuinely, during lockdown, I've had days when I've done less than 1,000 steps. When I have been sat at my desk, sat on the sofa, and you kind of realize I'm just not moving anymore. So it's more of a case of just getting myself moving, getting myself going, and trying to feel a little bit fitter.
Okay, sounds good.
Thank you.
Keep us up to date. Let us know if you reach that cool million, as you put it. We've got plenty coming up over the course of the next 30 to 45 minutes or so. All the reaction, the goalkeeping reaction from the Premier League and the EFL. But first, a bit of correspondence, Rich, and this wasn't so much correspondence, but another thesis on Twitter, almost, by a lad called James Maley, who goes under the Twitter handle at Report Posh. We keep meeting these child geniuses, don't we? He's not really a child, but a youthful genius.
Yeah, it's nice. I like the fact that we've got so many goalkeeping geniuses associated with us now.
He's doing a BA in sports coaching, I believe, and an MSc in sports psychology.
Okay.
So
what did
like
he find?
The John Harrisons of this world. He has, so he's basically done a report on top hand saves and bottom hand saves. This actually stems from the Carabao Cup game at Old Trafford between Manchester United and Man City a couple of weeks ago. And he said that it's interesting to see two different approaches to high saves. So he's flagged one from Zach Steffen and he's flagged one from Dean Henderson. Dean Henderson's was a bottom hand save. Zach Steffen's was a top hand save. And he basically argues whether one technique is better. He says anything below the top third of the goal, the bottom hand is optimal as it gives greater horizontal coverage and therefore allows greater goal coverage. However, for higher shots, especially diving saves near the crossbar and the top corner, the top hand is usually optimal. He's then thrown in a couple of images of David De Gea, a top hand save and a bottom hand save. And he said from the two saves below, you can see that De Gea, who is right hand dominant, diving left, he goes with his top hand. However, to the right, he goes bottom hand, presumably because he isn't comfortable making top hand saves with his weaker hand. He then goes on to elaborate on why that is. And he says, first, the top hand allows for a higher vertical reach. It also doesn't have to fight gravity and ensures the force of the hand is traveling in the same direction as the rest of the body. This makes getting off the ground and accelerating into the air slash across the goal easier. It also allows more force to be applied to the ball. He then speaks about the bottom hand and says that that requires De Gea to jump off his right foot and reach with his right hand. This is a hard skill and makes it harder to get off the ground. It therefore requires excellent athleticism and power to execute. He then refers to an Iker Casillas saves and then goes on to speak about Dean Henderson. He says, going bottom hand also means the keeper's chest slash shoulders turn back towards goal, which again makes applying force onto the ball difficult as the weight of the diving hand is travelling back towards the goal. To get around this, keepers often need to flick their wrist to make the save, although it is hard to get significant distance into such a save. Back to Dean Henderson, it got me thinking, does he ever make top hand saves? So James has then gone through all the saves and goals conceded from Dean Henderson up to January 2019, right? The verdict, he says, no top hand saves. He often gets away with not needing to use a top hand save due to good positioning and incredibly strong wrists slash hands, but it does mean his technique is often suboptimal with him turning in the air to face his own goal. There weren't actually too many occasions where he was beaten with high shots. There were three rockets he didn't dive for, and I think partly due to his issues accelerating high into the air. Just to finish, he's shown an example of where Dean Henderson could have maybe gone with his top hand during his loan spell with Sheffield United. He ended up going for his bottom hand. The issue with top hand saves, says James, is that it's a tough skill to learn. At this stage in his career, Henderson is unlikely to develop the technique. He is an excellent shot stopper, but for low slash mid-height shots, he is unlikely to ever be an elite shot stopper of shots near the top corner. What do you make of that?
There you go. I don't know where to start.
I know.
No, I really enjoyed all that, and it makes a lot of sense. The bit that he touched on in terms of having a dominant hand, I think there's something in that, certainly, from a personal point of view. Mine was actually my left hand. So when I dived to my right, I was very comfortable making a top hand save, yet I never, ever made one go into my left. I would always still use my left hand. So there were two very different techniques I had, diving to my right and diving to my left. I was also a lot more comfortable diving to my right. I felt really, really comfortable throwing myself. Didn't matter if it was concrete floor. I could throw myself fully to my right, but certainly never to my left. So there is a lot of stuff like this that does come into it. I think that absolutely there are times, of course, where top hand makes sense. And I'd always give the example of a ball that's dipping under the bar in the top corner. And you think about it logically, you think about it physically. If you're 2 or 3 yards off your line, there's literally no way you can get there with your bottom hand. There is only the option of diving up and trying to get that top hand to it. So, of course, there are certain shots, depending on trajectory, depending on the movement on the shot, etc., as to what hand you go with. But no, I love the fact that he's been able to break it down and go into so much detail.
Yeah, top stuff, James. If you've observed anything like that in the world of goalkeeping, do let us know at GK Union on Twitter, hello@goalkeepersunion.net, or our brand new number 07503673020. Rich, before we get on with the Between the Sticks for this week, it's worth just flagging the interview we did with Carl Hakimi recently.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, fantastic. I mean, one of the most unique interviews I think we've ever done, certainly from a personal point of view, one of the most enjoyable. Went off on all sorts of different tangents, speaking a lot about mentality, spirituality, linking it all back into goalkeeping, of course. So I've got no doubt that people listening into that, you guys will enjoy it thoroughly, I'm sure.
A little snippet?
Let's do it.
Why not?
I think I always had a strong mentality when I came into football. I had a hard-working mentality, that sort of work ethic. But then I think it was trying to find myself and trying to find what worked for me. As I was speaking more to a psychologist, I sort of accepted the way that I felt and that how my mind works, because I tried to be a little bit calmer and not worry about things and try to go into training that way, still working hard and stuff like that. But tried to be a bit relaxed and it just didn't work for me. But then when I sat down with a psychologist a few times and he realised what my personality was like, we realised that I liked structure and I liked knowing what I was doing through the week. So we put that into my plan. My plan building up to a game was I'd know what I'm doing throughout the week. I'd be working on something that the goalkeeper coach wouldn't even know I'm working on, but it'd just be in my own mind. And it was always to make sure I wasn't stagnant. We realised, and I realised, is that the structure works best for me, and just going with the flow just doesn't work for me. I can't get in the right mind frame. I like to know that I've done things throughout the week. I accepted that then, that was just me, and I didn't let it hinder me in a way, because when I was being relaxed or trying to be too aggressive, it played in my mind more. It got me questioning myself more and questioning myself going into games more. And then when I had the structure and routine, I just pull it as, I've done my work Monday to Friday. What happens on Saturday is going to happen now. Mm. Like I've done my work for the week. I couldn't have done anything more. I planned perfectly. And what will happen in this game will happen if I was to make a mistake. There's nothing I could do. I couldn't have prepared any better. And it was having that balance between, even in the change room before game, I'd like to, it changed how I got ready as well, how prepared. I'd get changed, get in early, get changed, relax until 10 to 2. I think about 10 to 2-ish. I think I used to go out, but I started to shorten my warm-up a little bit. But I think about 10 to 2, I started to get ready in the change room, and that's when the switch happened, where I'd start to talk to less people, start to warm up in the change room, and then as soon as I started to warm up, that's when the change, it just sort of intensified. And getting from the warm up, get changed again, sort of relax a little bit, and then when I get on the pitch, I'm in the sort of right zone to play. Then if I went out for the warm up and was like relaxed, it wouldn't work for me. If I went into the game angry, it wouldn't work for me. It was just them balances that just seemed to work for me personally, to have that, as I said earlier, the line between aggression and calmness. And I think it was pretty much how I was in the change room leading up to the game, but really calm, having a chat, and then it just switched just 10 minutes before I was about to go out to warm up.
So that was Carl Hakimi. Like you said, Rich, a really good interview on psychology, spirituality, all sorts, meditation. We really went deep on that one. Sound not particularly brilliant, though. He does sound like he's talking through a potato. I think he was doing it from a bunker somewhere, wasn't he?
Unfortunately, it's annoying because from our point of view, I know we've now fixed that with all the pods that we'll be doing moving forward. But yeah, unfortunately, the sound wasn't fantastic for that. But again, we do massively recommend that you do tune into it, because some of the bits of wisdom that he gave were fantastic.
Yep, they were. On with the show.
Let's do it.
I think there is no better place to start, Richard, than Kasper Schmeichel. Mm. 400 up for the Great Dane. That was his 94th consecutive Premier League appearance for Leicester City. He is now 10th in the all-time appearance list for the Foxes. 400 games for the club. Quite an incredible achievement. A clean sheet against Southampton. 3 very good saves. What a goalkeeper.
Absolutely. I don't really know what I need to add to that. I think you've pretty much summed it all up there. You know, we touch on him quite a lot in this podcast. And to be honest, 99% of what we talk about when we refer to him is very positive. You know, I think he's certainly been one of the, if not the most consistent goalkeeper over the last, 8-10 years? Do you know what I would say? And this might sound a bizarre thing to say, given the number of Premier League games that he's played. For me, he's still slightly underrated. I think, you know, the achievements that he has already, and there's still many more to come, I've got no doubt. And actually now it's a very interesting season, looking at where Leicester are on the table and what he's done already to date. But I still don't quite feel that he maybe gets the appreciation that he deserves. Again, just a personal opinion, because I think he is incredibly consistent, very few errors. For Leicester City, you know, you've got to feel for Danny Ward. Went there for so much money and was obviously hoping that at some point he would get some game time. But when you're behind Kasper Schmeichel, it's just not going to happen.
And we may just have a Kasper Schmeichel podcast coming up for the listeners.
Yes, indeed, Matthew. Potentially. Are we allowed to say anything just yet?
Or? I think that's enough, isn't it?
Is that enough? We'll just leave that out there.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Looking forward to that one. Very much so. Let's go over to Molineux, where West Brom got their first win under Sam Allardyce against their local rivals, Wolves. And David Button was in goal. Sam Johnstone, of course, out with COVID. A first appearance in the Premier League for West Brom for Button, and a decent performance.
Yeah, very solid. No, someone that obviously I know very well from my time at Brentford and still very close with now. So I was delighted for him because, do you know what? It's a tough gig stepping in for Sam Johnstone. Certainly this season, given the plaudits that Sam Johnstone's been given, and rightly so. You know, he's had some fantastic performances this season. So of course, when he's stepping in, they did a little feature beforehand saying how much they could miss Sam Johnstone. And of course, it's like anybody that steps in for someone that's doing well, there's always that extra little bit of pressure. But I just thought he was so solid throughout. You know, nothing he could have done on the 2 goals. Handling was very good, I thought. Came for an excellent punch as well in the second half. Body language was very, very strong. And the fact that they got the victory and came back in the way that they did, and I thought the last 20 minutes, him and the whole defence just looked very calm, very settled. They ran the clock down very well, because you certainly thought at 3-2 when they got that third goal, there was still going to be more goals in the game. But I just thought that West Brom then killed the game very well, which of course was then a big compliment to David Button. So no, delighted for him. It'll be an interesting decision now, because I know that Sam Johnson, of course, certainly doesn't deserve to be dropped. Absolutely not. He's been very, very good. But of course, they've got the game now on Tuesday. I mean, certainly from David Button's point of view, you'd like to think that maybe they would just give him at least one more game. Of course, though, if West Brom do win again, then it could be a very difficult decision for Sam Allardyce thereafter.
Okay, sticking on West Brom just quickly, their number three this season was Jonathan Bond. He has now flown across the Atlantic over to La La Land and joined LA Galaxy. What a move.
Yeah, fantastic. Now, buzzing for Jonathan, again, someone I've known for a long time, and I was able to help with this for him, which was pleasing, both as obviously a lad that I work with, but also from a personal point of view, because I think that Jonathan Bond, not very well known by most, it has to be said, because of course when you're playing the role of a number two or number three, you don't necessarily get much of the limelight. And how often have we seen it where there are very good goalkeepers, we use Martinez as a good example, when you are a number two, you're not necessarily able to show what you can do. But no, hopefully now he's going to an excellent club in the MLS, arguably the most iconic club in the MLS. So it's a really good opportunity for him now to become a number one and show the world how good he is.
Commentary Corner. We're back with the big hitters for Commentary Corner. Richard, Mr. Gary Neville and Mr. Jamie Carragher. A little bit of Graeme Souness in there as well. But I'm delighted to say, mate, we had our, not weekly, our occasional date night.
We did.
Again, we over did. The course of this weekend on Zoom, of course. But I pitched it to you that we pitch up on Zoom and watch Fulham and Chelsea and the next day Liverpool's game against Manchester United. And we were not disappointed by the commentary, by the punditry.
Indeed, it was a glass of red for me, coffee for you.
Always.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, it was. We weren't. And I decided to watch the game with volume on because it was date night. And of course, I can't be watching it on mute while you've got the volume on. And I'm kind of glad we did. It did prompt me to put a couple of tweets out. I did get a little bit annoyed, but no, I'm kind of glad we did because it is giving us content for the show.
It has indeed. So let's start at Craven Cottage and Jamie Carragher on Edouard Mondi. And we've spoken extensively about the narrative shift here, haven't we? Now, early on in the game, I can't even remember exactly what happened with this one, but Carragher said, this is towards Mondi, "I don't know if we're still quite sure on the goalkeeper. It's still early days. He started off fantastically. He's made a few mistakes since then. As I say, the jury is still out, but fair to say he's probably a step up from the goalkeeper they had before," right? And then we have the incident where a through ball was put through by Fulham. Azpilicueta is racing backwards. Mondi is coming out. Azpilicueta goes to pass it back and Mondi was out of position, or was he? Let's go to Jamie Carragher. What is he doing? Goalkeeper just does something completely stupid. Stay in your goal. It's always the keeper's fault in that situation. He can see everyone. I've had so many arguments myself as a player with goalkeeper. Azpilicueta has it under control.
Yeah, right. Where do we start with this? Firstly, Jamie Carragher was a defender. So what point of view is he seeing? He's only seeing the defender's point of view. He's not seeing the goalkeeper's point of view at all. Now, let's consider this scenario. What is the best case scenario defensively when you're looking at this situation? Well, that to me is quite obvious. The ball in the goalkeeper's hands is the best scenario because then the danger's dead, full stop. If Azpilicueta ends up passing it back to Mondi, he has to clear it. First time. You probably lose possession of the football again. But that's probably the second best situation. Now, what's ended up happening here is that Mondi's obviously thinking the defender's going to shield the striker and allow him to come and get the ball. The problem you've got is a communication problem. That's all that it is. It's not necessarily anyone's fault. Yeah, you could blame Mondi saying, well, surely he's got to communicate better. Maybe he has, but again, this is what happens when you've got a new goalkeeper in a team and they haven't quite got that relationship with the defenders straight away. That can take a bit of time to build, to understand how each of you communicate, also to understand like how a goalkeeper reacts in certain situations. Now, this was simply that. For me, I don't necessarily blame either of them, but at the same time, they both have to take responsibility for it. But the fact that Jamie Carragher says this is always the goalkeeper's fault, absolutely not. Yes, he can see the entire pitch, but if the communication lines aren't there, It's as simple as that. And I go back to my initial point. The perfect scenario here would have been what Mondi had in mind, which was to come out and smother the ball. If Aspilicueta does his job, he holds off the striker, and it's a very, very simple situation. But of course, in the end, it all becomes a bit of a mess when Aspilicueta makes a decision to pass it back, which Mondi didn't want. And of course, it doesn't look great thereafter.
On this particular one, do you know, for me, it was just the disdain in his voice. It was the way he was emphasized. What is he doing? He said something completely stupid, like he was a stupid little kid on a playground. And I thought that is where it was really unnecessary for me. Regardless of whether he's right or wrong, the way that he was using the tone of his voice to convey what he considered Mondi to have done, I thought was wrong. And then I think it was a few moments later, Thiago Silva gives him a back pass in a not too dissimilar position. Now, in my opinion, Mondi does well with that. He takes a touch and then he clears it. It goes out of play, and then Mondi looks at Silva and says, "Blimmin' heck, mate, you know, that was a bit of a tricky one." So the commentators actually say, and Jamie Carragher on this occasion said, starting to get the feeling with this Chelsea goalkeeper at the moment that something could happen when the ball comes back to him, decision making when he's not involved too much.
Yeah, and that's the problem. You know, look, it's what we touch on seemingly every week on this, and we always talk about the narrative, but that's it now. That's planted in Jamie Carragher's mind. And here you go. Here's a psychological one for you. People see what they want to see, so they will find what they want to find. And the problem with that is that now that these seeds have been planted and you can feel the shift in narrative, and by the way, this is a clean sheet that he's clipped. It's a 1-0 victory, and generally I thought he was very solid in this game, and yet somehow he's come out with a little bit of negativity, which arguably, as you mentioned, I thought he did fine in that situation. Took a good touch, wasn't anything on, so what's your next option? Put it out of play. They can't score if it's out of play. Absolutely fine, no problem. But then to have negativity towards that based on a situation prior, which again, I think both take responsibility for, which is largely due to the fact that he's new and he's still getting used to his surroundings, it's just not on for me.
And this again raises the argument, again, we're not going to bleat on about it, although we kind of have for the past 5 minutes, but Timo Werner raced through towards the end of the game at pace, not the easiest chance, but it was a one-on-one that a player of his calibre, that we're supposed to have been believed he is, coming into the Premier League from Leipzig, playing up front for Chelsea, and he put it wide. A one-on-one, in my opinion, he should be scoring that. Jamie Carragher, he just couldn't get the bend on it.
Yeah,
that was the reaction.
Yeah.
So why is he not using the same disdain to describe that chance that he's missed as he did for what happened with Edouard Mondi? Just a quick word on the goal that Mason Mount scored, Alphonse Areola. At first, Jamie Carragher didn't have anything to say about it, but he was then prompted by Martin Tyler. He said, yeah, it wasn't great. Same as a defender, when you're praying, it goes to your own man.
There's nothing more he can do. And actually, if you watch it prior, he does very well in that his positioning is excellent. So he's at the front post, then he takes a step back when the ball moves. So again, very intelligent goalkeeping. When the ball's crossed over, the bit that would have helped him would have been a shout from somebody at the far post, because he could have actually left the cross and there wasn't any danger behind him. But of course, he can't know that. So if you're a goalkeeper in that situation, if you can somehow scoop it over the bar, great. That's probably the best situation you could then put yourself in. He isn't able to do that. So he then just gets a good hand to it. And at that point, you're reliant on luck. There's nothing more you can do. It's out of his control. So there's absolutely no error here. He does the right thing in the circumstance that he was given. And unfortunately for him, of course, it lands to a Chelsea player and they put it in the back of the net. But absolutely no error. But again, it goes back to the point we've made over and over and over again. It's very easy to say, well, that's not great. Give us a little bit more. Explain to me why it isn't great. Because in my opinion, there's nothing more he can do.
Let's go to Anfield, bring in Neville and Souness, shall we? This was my favourite part of the weekend, I think, because we both called it. When David De Gea made that save from Thiago, you said someone's going to say something about a camera save. Jamie Carragher did say camera save, and I think that's all he said. And then when Alisson made that brilliant save from Paul Pogba late on, I said one of them is going to say straight at him and one of them's going to say either side of the goalkeeper and it's a goal. And top three, bingo, we got them all.
Goalkeeping cliches for fun. Yeah, it really was. And again, I to the point where I had to put a tweet out, because it's just, again, it was just very good goalkeeping from David De Gea. And you mentioned it earlier when Werner misses and the reaction is, oh, a little bit more bend, he would have scored. When David De Gea makes an excellent save, watched it all the way, two good hands to it, puts it into an excellent area, brilliant parry. And all he gets is, oh, camera save. Come on. Like, again, give us a little bit more, a little bit more positivity.
Could he have done anything else there? He couldn't have caught it.
You can't hold that. He's coming at such pace. So what he's done, he's had to move his body. And it was a little bit awkward because of the movement on the ball. You could see it wasn't a natural dive that he would normally make. It wasn't his prettiest save, but it was so effective. So I really enjoyed that piece of goalkeeping. And then to get that comment, it's a bit of a put down, really. The camera save isn't a positive. You know, when people say it to you in training, they're normally joking or they're giving you a bit of stick. So it's not a positive that they were saying about David De Gea. So no, it just wound me up a little bit. And I just thought it was very dismissive of a very good bit of goalkeeping. Yet if you see an outfield player do something of a similar level, they would be getting a lot of praise for it. So I found that frustrating. And then that was only compounded when I saw the Alisson one. And I actually felt, you know what, I felt a little bit sorry for Pogba here as well, because after the game, Roy Keane making it clear that Pogba has to score. Do you know, there's a lot of reasons as to why he didn't score. For a start, you've got a defender covering, and in fairness to Graham Souness, he touched on this. It was a defender covering, which also impacted Alisson's position. So positionally, Alisson was perfect here. Didn't come too far down the line, which would have meant he had no reaction time. Wasn't too deep, which would have given Pogba more chance or a bigger goal to aim at. The fact he knew the defender was coming across from the right-hand side, he sets his position ever so slightly to the left than he normally would. So in the end, it's a very difficult chance for Pogba, because the only place he probably scores is in the top corner. If he hits the top corner, I think he scores. Other than that, I think Alisson had position himself so well that he'd given him very, very little to aim at. And then he shows his goalkeeping brilliance, the reaction that he makes in order to get his hands to it and shovel it around the post. It's brilliant goalkeeping. But of course, to the untrained eye, i.e. Mr. Neville, you know, that to him looks like it's gone straight at the goalkeeper, which of course it has, but there's so much more to it, as we've just explained, than, oh, it's straight at the goalkeeper.
Do you think, and this isn't specifically on goalkeeping, but do you think that Paul Pogba recognised it was Fabinho, wasn't it, that was sliding in? Because if Pogba does hit that low and into the corner, to not sound really uneducated and coin those cliches, but if he does do that, then it's likely it might have gone in. So do you think that Pogba was aware of Fabinho so much that he opted for the shot that he eventually opted for?
Yeah, it's a split-second decision. But of course, if you've got a defender coming across you, and again, I'm speaking now in the position of someone taking the shot, which I haven't been in that position, but I'm pretty certain that in your peripheral vision, you're seeing a defender come steaming across. So you're thinking, if I hit it to the left-hand side, look, it might go through him and go in the corner. It might do, or it might get blocked. So that will then come into your thinking. There's also part of it, it's not the easiest chance that it's on the half volley. So you just want to make a really good connection and hit it as hard as you can and hope that it either goes through the goalkeeper, the goalkeeper can't react, the goalkeeper's too far down the line, the goalkeeper's too deep. There's so many different reasons. That same shot could have beaten Alisson had he not positioned himself in the optimal position. Look, that probably beats a number of goalkeepers in the Premier League who are not as tactically astute as Alisson, or who is not as quick thinking as Alisson in terms of what is the optimal position when Pogba's got a half volley from about 8 yards out. And he takes up the best position. And look, he did it as well earlier on in the game, and it probably didn't get enough credit. The save he made with his feet were, again, positionally excellent, sets brilliantly, so quick to react and utilising every part of his body in order to make the save. He showed two moments of brilliance, which for me, in the end, were the reason that United didn't win the game.
Richard, it's been a while.
It has indeed. It is time for the Championship rundown, and we start at the Riverside. Middlesbrough 0, Birmingham 1. I want to give a little bit of love to Neil Etheridge here. Had a couple of tough moments recently, it's fair to say, but a fantastic performance here. A couple of excellent saves and a big clean sheet away at Middlesbrough. Massive win for Birmingham, that. Blackburn 1, Stoke 1. Two solid goalkeeping performances here, Joe Bursic and Kaminski. A huge win for Luton at Bournemouth. Firstly, to mention Asmir Begovic, a couple of excellent saves, a double save in particular that he made. Very quick save with his feet. Got up, top right-hand corner, excellent save, but it was to no avail in the end. And credit to Simon Sluger as well, who made an excellent save towards the end of this one. Bristol City ran out 2-0 winners over Preston. Preston giving a debut to Daniel Everson in goal there. Another clean sheet for Daniel Bentley. Cardiff went down 2-1 to Norwich. A solid performance from Alex Smithies, and got forgot to give a mention to Daniel Barden, who stepped in here. Of course, he played the cup game recently and played his part in this game here. Never easy stepping in for someone of the likes of Tim Krul, but to get a victory away at Cardiff, big well done to him. Derby went down 1-0 to Rotherham. Massive win this for Rotherham, and a couple of very good saves from Jamal Blackman in this one. Nottingham Forest beat Millwall 3-1. Watford winning 2-0 over Huddersfield. A first league game for Daniel Backman. In fact, his first game, I believe, since a game for Kilmarnock back in 2018-2019. So he has had to wait quite some time, but he certainly showed what he's capable of with a very solid clean sheet here. A tough moment, it has to be said, for Ryan Schofield. We're going to be touching on that shortly. Barnsley 0, Swansea 2. Yet another clean sheet for Mr. Freddie Woodman, who made a lovely save, delicious save, up to his top left. A save that you could just watch over and over again. Again, a save that no doubt Matthew and I will be going into a little bit more detail shortly.
Very good, Richard. And yes, we will. Why not start there? What a save from Freddie Woodman. One of those saves that you like to just keep watching, especially from that angle from behind the striker. Just lovely in slow motion.
It was. It was a brilliant strike, it has to be said. It was about 30 yards out on the half volley. It's going right in the top corner. The thing I liked about it was that he got himself set very quickly. Good bit of footwork. Got a quick couple of steps in, then exploded to his left. It was the lower hand, as it would be, the left hand. But it was just a connection with the hand as well. It was such a satisfying sound as you're watching it. And again, it balloons over the bar off his left palm. And then he does two or three rolls as well for good measure. So brilliant save from Freddie Woodman.
A word on Swansea as well. Ben Hamer has moved to the Swans permanently. I think a lot of people thought that might be a loan deal. He's gone permanently from Huddersfield.
Yeah, an interesting one. It was well known that Swansea were needing a number two, an unfortunate injury to Stephen Bender. And there were a few people that were rumoured to be going there. But Ben Hamer, I think, is a good fit in terms of how they play. The head of recruitment there, or I forget his exact title, but is Andy Scott, who actually signed Ben Hamer a couple of times when he was Brentford manager. So there was a few good connections. Obviously, Martin Margotson, the England goalkeeper coach, I believe, is a fan of his as well. So in the end, all the stars aligned, and it's an excellent move, I think, for Ben Hamer.
Okay, you mentioned there Daniel Bentley's clean sheet for Bristol City against Preston. We should also mention Declan Rudd now is out for the season. A debut for Daniel Everson. I'm sure we'll be speaking about him a few more times throughout the course of the season. But best wishes to Declan Rudd.
Yeah, absolutely. He's had a very, very solid season. So big loss for them. And I know he put some pictures out of him in the hospital. And I saw there were thousands of comments wishing him well. And we just want to add our best wishes too.
We do indeed. You also mentioned Ryan Schofield, which means it is time for this.
Bada boom, bada bing. It's only a keeper caper.
Yes, Vicarage Road, where Watford beat Huddersfield Town by 2-0. And we should say that Schofield made a couple of very good saves. First from Joao Pedro and then from Ismaila Sarr. But then Tom Cleverley stole in. It was a weak back pass from Vallejo. And a bit of an odd one here from Schofield. What was going on?
It was. And I just want to reiterate what you've just said there, because it showed the two saves. We're watching Sky Sports News. And of course, they're showing the highlights as the games are going on. And he made a couple of excellent saves. And I thought we have to highlight them when we do our show. And then, of course, later on, unfortunately for him, this goal went in. And I've watched it a few times. And it's one of them where you mentioned it was a poor back pass. We need to stress that, because it was a bit short. But he just seems to wait a second too long. I think he thinks he's got a little bit more time than he has. And as you say, credit to Tom Cleverley, because I don't think there's many players that would have had the tenacity and bravery of Tom Cleverley, because he has rushed in there and thrown himself at the ball. And essentially it turns into a 50-50 tackle, one that Tom Cleverley wins and the ball then cannons into the net. But you just felt with Ryan Schofield, probably thought he had a little bit more time. Had he had taken that step forward a split second earlier, he could have got there and I'm sure cleared his lines. But yeah, frustrating moment for him.
Yeah, just a strange one to watch, because even though Cleverley went in for the 50-50, it was a long time. You're thinking, what's going on here? Where is he? What's happening? He was quite deep as well, I think, wasn't he? He was, and someone tweeted us in about that, the fact that he was based on his line.
Yeah, he was. I think it was more, I don't think the position he had was necessarily too much of an issue. I think it was just the reaction to actually step forward and try and make the clearance. He just waited that split second too long. And we see it over and over where keepers do take risks when it comes to balls coming back, often when they'll take a touch and they'll wait to the very last second before they clear it or look to play it out. And it just felt like that was the case here, that he just waited that split second too long in order to make the step forward. And unfortunately for him, it was costly.
Okay, best of the rest from the EFL. Jake Forster-Caskey with a corner kick straight through for Charlton at Bristol Rovers. Joe Day, the Rovers goalkeeper. Is that the fault of a goalkeeper or is that just what it is?
I don't think it is because it has to be cleared at the near post. I don't know what's going on there, but it's managed to squirm its way through. And of course, it catches the goalkeeper by surprise. And at that point, it's creeping into your near post and it's too late before you can do anything.
Dave Richards in for just his second league start of the season at Crewe. Will Jaskalainen was dropped to the bench after that 3-3 draw at Rochdale. And Jack Bonham with a good save for Gillingham towards the end of their win at Accrington.
Yeah, it was. And it was a huge win, has to be said, for Gillingham. Not an easy place to go. Acton have been fantastic so far this season. And games in hand as well. You feel like they could be there or thereabouts if they carry on the form that they've shown. But credit to Gillingham. Credit to Jack, who again is having a really consistent season. I'm trying to think how many games that is in total now he's played for Gillingham, Bristol Rovers, and of course Carlisle before that. He's built a really solid CV. And again, he's putting in solid performances.
We love a goalkeeper assist as well, don't we? Gavin Batsunu on loan at Rochdale from Manchester City with an airmail assist for Jack Beasley. It was Rochdale against Wigan. It was a 3-3 draw. This made it 2-2, but he launched it up there.
Oh, phenomenal strike. The technique on it's very, very good. Again, it's a side volley, but it's a real piercing side volley. Stays pretty low the entire time, and it must land, what, 5 yards from the opposition box? It's an unfortunate moment for Owen Evans because he's trying to wait for the bounce to see if he can claim it at the highest point. And credit to the striker who comes in with the momentum, with good spring, and manages to get his head there and get enough power for it to then go in the back of the net. But yeah, huge credit on the assist.
Yeah, funny old time to be a Rochdale keeper as well at the moment. He made a really good save actually against Charlton in that bonkers game, the 4-4 draw earlier on in the week. That was from Chuksanike late on. But in the last 8 games for Rochdale, 41 goals have gone in.
Wow.
Which is quite staggering. So they won 4-0 at Plymouth. They lost 2-0 at home to Lincoln. Then they lost 4-1 away at Peterborough. Then they beat Wigan 5-0 away. They lost 4-1 at home to Gillingham. Then they drew 3-0 with Crewe, 4-4 with Charlton, and 3-3 with Wigan.
Yeah, it certainly sounds like it's not the worst time to be a Rochdale fan. You're certainly getting value for money, if nothing else. Although, of course, fans can't go into the ground at the moment, so they'll be streaming. But just to touch on Bazuna, he is very, very highly rated. He's certainly one that I know Man City have got massively high hopes for. So one to keep an eye on, I believe.
Into League Two, Tom King kept his place in goal for Newport. Nick Townsend back, but on the bench, which I thought was an interesting choice there. That was his first appearance in League Two this season. A very good save from Dimitar Mitov. Zero recognition for this one in Cambridge's draw with Colchester. It was early on. Omar Sawumni stole in a free kick. It went for a corner. It was, I don't want to say it was underwhelming, but it was just one of those saves that kind of fell into the ether, but a really good stop.
Brave. Really brave. It was one where he had to put his body on the line. He got to the ball and effectively made it a 50-50. But again, it's the kind of save that certain goalkeepers may well pull out or try to do, make it a reaction save or stay on their line and try to see what they can do. But no, the fact that he got himself involved, brave save, and thankfully for him, got the rewards.
Ian Lawler, good double save for Oldham at Walsall.
Excellent. It's one of those balls that comes in and you think it's going to be headed, so you can't go for the initial ball until you know whether the header's going to take place or not. It doesn't, so at which point it has to get down very sharply to his right to make the initial save. And again, it was the speed at which he got up, got set, and then a very good second save to get it away from danger.
And we have to mention James McKeown, the Grimsby goalkeeper, who is now the record appearance maker for a goalkeeper at Grimsby Town. He made it 473 in their goalless draw with Southend and made a big save late on from Ashley Nathaniel George.
Yeah, massive credit to him. Very unusual now for a player to play that many games for a club in League Two. And I say that based on the fact that there's always so much movement, you feel, like whether they're getting promoted, relegated, continual change, especially for a goalkeeper now as well. So many being loaned from Premier League Championship. So for a goalkeeper to stick around that long, and I know that he's had his ups and downs while at the club, but to stick around that long and to amass that number of games is huge.
There's one more thing, actually, that I wanted to mention. I've got a name for you.
Go on.
Chris Sargentson.
Okay.
Does that ring any bells?
No.
Okay, so I think I might have got this right. I don't know. But a few weeks ago, you brought in a picture or a leaflet or something. Someone had sent you about a game that you played years ago for the county or someone. I can't remember what it was. Do you remember?
I think I showed you a team sheet for when I was at Blackburn. We played against Man United.
That's
reserves.
It. That is the one. And the referee, I'm sure, was a guy called Chris Sargentson.
Right, how am I going to remember that? Are you kidding me? No disrespect, Chris, if you're listening in. But no, I don't remember all the referees that have...
The only reason I mention it, yeah. Still a ref.
Okay.
He was ref in the Barrow-Scunthorpe game at the weekend.
How do you know this kind of stuff?
Because it came up that Chris Sargentson had sent someone off in that game or something. And he's still a ref.
Okay, well, good
so
news.
So he was a ref when you were playing as a kid.
Okay.
You since finished, and he's still reffing games.
He's still going. How old is he?
No idea. I don't know. I'd imagine he's quite old.
Yeah. Well, I can't remember whether it was a good or bad performance in that game. I think we lost. So, well, look, good luck to him. Well done, Chris. Clean Sheet Club. Yes, indeed. It is a club that everybody wants to be part of. Were you ever part of the chess club at school, Matthew?
Chess?
Chess.
I was actually, yeah.
Are you really?
Yeah. I had no idea. I had no idea what I was doing. Mm. I had no idea how to play chess, but I would go to these schools and play chess and not know what I was doing, so just move pieces.
But you knew where the pieces could move?
Yeah, I knew where they could move, but I didn't know what it meant or how.
But you just
they
wanted
impacted.
To be part of that club, didn't you?
I wanted to be part of it, yeah.
And that's the same as Clean Sheet Club. They all want to be part of Clean Sheet Club. Let's start with Robert Sanchez. Second of the season for him. Lucas Fabianski, 4 successive shutouts for West Ham. Kasper Schmeichel, 1 to follow the FA Cup clean sheet from last week. Alisson, that's 3-5 in the Premier League. David De Gea, 2 on the spin for him. Edison, 4 in a row, either side of COVID. Neil Etheridge, keeping it clean in a first win since December 9th. Simon Sluga, a first championship clean sheet since the first week in November. Dan Bentley, a first in 7. Jamal Blackman, a third of the season and a big one at Derby. Daniel Backman, a first clean sheet in his first league appearance for the Hornets. He's had to wait since the final day of the 2018-2019 season, a 1-0 win while at Kilmarnock for the honour. Freddie Woodman, 8th in 10 in all competitions. Lee Burge, 3-5 for him. Jack Bonham, first since 2 in a row in early December. Ben Amos, long awaited after keeping 6 on the bounce in October. This is just his second in the last 12 games since. Thomas Holy, 8th of the season in all competitions in just 15 games. Craig McGillivray, 5 on the bounce in League One. Christy Pym, first since the end of November. Joel Dixon, 3-5 in an ever-present campaign at Barrow. James McKeown, clean sheet on a record-breaking appearance. Mark Oxley, first 11 games, no clean sheets. Next 11 games, 6 clean sheets. Lawrence Vigouroux, 3 on the spin, also ever-present this term. Tom King, a clean sheet on his first league start. Vaclav Kladky, 6-9 and flying up the charts. Jamie Cumming, 2-3. And finally, Scott Davies, keeping himself in the running with a 10th of the season.
Very good, Richard. Do you want the table?
Let's do it.
Flying high in top spot is still Freddie Woodman with 14 clean sheets in 23. Vaclav Kladky has flown up to second spot now, 12 in 23. And then we have 3 goalkeepers all on 10 clean sheets. Scott Davies comes first because he has done it in 18 games. Alex Palmer in second in 21 games. And Asmir Begovic in third, but fifth in 23 games. Feel like this table is going to get quite muddled over the course of the next few weeks with all these games being cancelled due to COVID. But Richard, it is time for Rate My Save. Okay, this one, Richard, was sent in by Charlie Merrick. I've got a feeling I might have seen this one before, but I don't know. It was for, I think, Farnborough Old Boys Guild Sunday Reserves. What a team name that is.
That's quite a mouthful.
I think I've got that right. And this was in the Kent Cup final, so it's in an important game. Are you ready?
Well, let's do it.
Let's go.
Okay, so the ball's been cleared long. It's coming through the defender. Oh, he's lost it. It's 1-1. He's just going to chip it into the empty goal. Oh! Up with the top right hand. What spring. He's still on the floor. Is he all right? But that is a fantastic save. I'll tell you what, the way in which he's backpedaled, I think he's realised his danger. He's getting back towards his goal. And oh, brilliant save. It's going right in the top corner as well. Yeah, fantastic save. Great footwork.
Yeah, he does look like he's on the floor there, doesn't he? I hope he's okay. You okay, Charlie?
Yeah, I hope so. I mean, the footage ends there. I kind of wanted to see the next few seconds. I just think he's just basking in the glory. He knows he's made an absolute world-class save, and he's just basking in the glory, lying there waiting for his teammates to come and congratulate him.
Yeah, that was sent in by Charlie Merrick. Charlie, thank you for that. If you would like your save rated by Richard on the podcast, very, very easy. Just tweet us at GK Union with hashtag RateMySave. Hello at goalkeepersunion.net or on our number 07503673020. Richard, I think that is just about it. But I wanted to give a shout out because Crew Alexandra put a tweet out about a week ago or so it was now, saying the club have been left devastated by the news that our under-12 academy goalkeeper, Ashton Hulme, has been diagnosed with a rare type of bone cancer, osteosarcoma. Ashton has begun his chemotherapy this week, and we will be with him every step of the way. This naturally prompted the Goalkeepers Union to be out in full force on Twitter, a whole bunch of messages for Ashton. I spoke to his mum a bit in the week just over Twitter, and she said, you know, the response has been overwhelming. There is a Just Giving page that people can donate to. It's justgiving.com/crowdfunding/amazing-ashton-hulme. And also his mum has set up an Instagram page to chart his progress as he tries to get back between the sticks. It is on Instagram at back_between_the_6. It's sad news to hear, but good that hopefully he's going to be back on the mend.
Yeah, absolutely. No, just to reiterate everything you just said there, I just want to send our very best wishes from the Goalkeepers Union.
Absolutely. All the best to you, Ashton. Okay, Richard, I think that is it.
I've really enjoyed today.
Good. This has been the Goalkeepers Union podcast, Between the Sticks. Keepers
away!